Welcome to Branching Out, a podcast presented by the reporters and editors of the Acorn newspapers, offering you a closer look at the news in your community.
Hi, this is Melissa Simon with the Simi Valley Acorn. It's March 8th, and this is Branching Out. It's week two of our series on Women's History Month, and today we'll be talking with Simi Valley City Council member Elaine Litster, who's going to share with us how she balances her role in city government and her pretty unique professional life.
Hi, I'm Elaine Litster, and I have a fun background, or fun plateful, I should say. I'm a professional harpist, play with the symphony. I am a business owner with my husband. We own a company named Safe Checks. I am the mother of five children, and yes, my youngest is finally in college, and I have the privilege of being a city council member representing representing the 3rd District for Simi Valley.
Professional harpist, Elaine, tell me a little bit about that career. How did you get into that?
You know, people sometimes ask me how long I've played the harp, and I've stopped telling them because it makes me sound really old, but it was probably my mother's dream, and I began playing the harp at age 12. And I learned very quickly you get very positive attention for playing such a beautiful instrument. And interestingly enough, I didn't major in music in college, although it was always a way to pay some of the bills because I would accompany professionally and do some things. But after I got my master's degree at UCLA, I returned to my harp studies. And that has just kind of been my background through the years. It works well with family to be playing for events and with a symphony locally and a few things. And so, no, it's just always been there. But I do, taking it back to my mother, I blame her. At the age of 4, I was, my big present I was so excited about was to get a piano book. And so I probably learned to read music before I learned to read the alphabet. And so that's just kind of one of the languages I speak.
Okay. And now you mentioned a symphony. So which symphony?
Well, so with this COVID thing, I don't know why I can even claim to be, but right now I am playing with the, I've got to get the Channel Island Chamber Orchestra. I need to use the correct acronym, CHICO. But I've played with a variety of local symphonies and everything when I lived in Idaho, from the Boise Philharmonic to I've also gone up the coast to Santa Barbara and play with the Bakersfield Symphony on occasion.
And so now we're talking about a harp, and when you hear someone in a symphony, you don't necessarily think like a harp would be the first. So what is it about the harp that continues to draw you back in?
You know, it's, well, it is, the harp is I think it's a universal language. In fact, some say it originated the twang of the hunter's bowstring. You read back in the Bible, it's back in Genesis, it talks about it. It just, I think it's one of those earthy instruments that every culture across the world plays, and in their own form. And so I just have grown to love it. In fact, the latest hat I wear with a harp is that I was the chairman of the board of the American Harp Society and treasurer of that national organization. And so I've gotten to know amazing harpists throughout the country. And so that also, I'll be honest, is a big draw. It's just the kinship I have with fellow musicians.
So you're balancing this life as a professional harpist with also owning a small business. So tell me a little bit about how those two things work together professionally.
You know, it is very fun to be able to put on a different hat and dress differently and be a different persona, which is what it is. Safe Checks we've owned for about 25 years. We provide high security check stock to municipalities, to corporations, and also to private individuals. Really, it was my husband's dream. He was a banker, and he took a division that he made, basically fabricated these checks to fight against check fraud that was starting to become rampant. It was so successful with their customers, he took that division and started his own business. And I said, "Okay, dear, I will do this with you." And we started it together. The one caveat was that it had to be within a mile of our house because he was a workaholic. And I started with him. I stepped up back from it when I realized someone's got to be home to raise the kids. And then I've reinserted myself as the children have gotten older, because it's a great business, does wonderful service, but there I do have some skills to offer there. So.
All right, and I do want to talk about your family, but before we jump in there, businesses have been highly affected with COVID. So have you guys been impacted by that as well?
Absolutely. And In some ways, and maybe I shouldn't say this online, but I feel it's almost criminal what's been done to so many businesses in terms of people losing their livelihoods. And when they came out with essential versus non-essential, it seems so wrong because a person's livelihood is essential to them. And so for me, that just to try to delineate business that way was just really a problem. And so I almost felt guilty telling people that my business was essential because we provide basically the means whereby people can have their paychecks and transact business. And so we were able to continue to operate, but certainly our business declined 25 to 30%. We were affected with employees who had to be home caring for to take care of their children through schooling situations. So I guess what was your initial question?
just like many other businesses, you
right?
Guys
were we affected? We were affected, and still we're trying to regain the business that we had. But my heart just goes out to all of the small business owners throughout our area that have just been really suffered. It's just not right.
Okay, and so I wanted to go back to your family now. So you mentioned you wanted to be home to take care of your kids. So talk to me a little bit about your kids.
I am blessed with 5 great, wonderful children. I guess I should share that they are adopted. And so I tell you that only because it was our choice. We wanted a family, and I really shouldn't say some of these things on podcast, but I tell people we kept kissing and nothing happened, and so we were blessed to make our family differently. And my children are exceptional. They are all come with different abilities, different backgrounds, and that's what makes our family so fun. And so they're all going different paths, from school in Hawaii to live in Las Vegas. Anyway, they're all young adults now, and still some of them still trying to figure things out, but. But I do think that as parents, you decide together what's the best path, which parent needs to be more engaged during the day, or you do what you can. It's a decision you make. You do it together. And so that was our path.
Okay. And you mentioned your kids are all different backgrounds, and you kind of talked about this from the dais as a city council member, especially during the conversations with race and diversity. So talk to me a little bit about how having kids from so many different backgrounds plays into your thought process when you're making decisions or those conversations come up.
You know, it's interesting. Yes, I do have, my children are of diverse racial background, and they've also married diverse racial backgrounds, which is great. I'm going to take it back to my childhood. I was raised my childhood was in Hawaii. And so I was, I guess, the minority there. I was the Haole. And so I know the circumstance of living in an environment where there are various different races and some discrimination, et cetera. I've lived and know that. And so I guess because of that experience of seeing possible experiences of my children, my own childhood, I think it does color the discussion on the dais. But truly, I don't see people as a race or color or background. To me, we are all of the human race, human beings. And so I keep going back to that on the dais, that decisions need to be made that benefit everyone. And of course, we need equality. Absolutely. There's no question about that. And if there's anything that is any racial prejudice, that needs to be stamped out. Has to be. But ultimately, I go back to that we are all of the same human race, and that's how we need to treat each other and interact with each other.
So we've had some interesting council meetings.
And I should say, Melissa, you've written some fun stories about that. I should acknowledge your good writing.
Can you talk on any of the big recent discussions that have hit the council and that have caused, I don't know if divisiveness is the right word, or division, or just kind of council members being at odds. I mean, how do you balance that, taking your background into effect and then being the city council leader that the city needs?
Well, I think it all comes down to respect. We need to respect each other, period. Clearly we don't all agree on positions, but that doesn't mean we can't still have a respectful, wonderful working relationship. And that's what I always try to go back to, that's important. And so that means not to denigrate others. It's not appropriate to name call, sling mud, whatever you want to say. It's just kind of important, even when And I find sometimes when something's said to me, I bristle internally. In fact, the last meeting when I was, someone commented, it was a comment made during public comments. And I thought, that's not true. That's not me. But I still have to recognize people are entitled to their opinions and have to be recognize that that is their reality. That's their perception. And so understanding that makes it much easier to govern and to make decisions.
And now talking about the city council, this is one of the first times that I recall having three women on the city council members.
Isn't that exciting during Women's History Month?
So talk to me a little bit about what it's like for you to be part of that, because it's a kind of a big deal for us.
I think it is. I think it is. And what it says really is that that I don't think the city of Simi Valley, that they're not mindful of gender, that really they feel they want whoever can do the job to govern. And whether you're male or female, we all have wonderful things to lend to the table. It was interesting when I was, and this may be pointed out somewhere in our conversation, I was initially appointed 2.5 years ago, and then I had the opportunity to run for office in November and was elected. But I recall when I was appointed, my hats were off to those who appointed me, because really, the vote that put me in was 2 men and 1 woman. And so it was, I just got to say that it was the two male votes that actually placed me there to start with, which took us to a 3-2 majority. And so my hats are off to them for that. It is exciting that there are three women there, but in my mind, to be honest, we all should govern the same. I mean, maybe, and so we all have different abilities, different things to add to the perspective, but it just gives you maybe a more robust, bigger understanding of how to govern.
Okay. So now looking back to when you were appointed and then eventually elected into your seat, Did you think that your time as a city council member would look the way that it is?
Melissa, it'll be funny. You envision what it's going to be like, and then when it happens, it's, oh my, this is what it is. In fact, I'll just share you, it's funny, the night I was appointed, I remember it was, a big blur, and all of a sudden I'm appointed. Here I was just an applicant, all of a sudden I'm appointed, and they're taking back and showing me my office. I didn't know it came with an office. The attorney was showing me his law library, and I thought, wow, we have this in the city. And I'm meeting all these people, and I remember walking by myself back to find my purse thinking, what have I done? And I actually had to audibleize that, because I recognized all of a sudden this is really a new world that I've entered. Certainly, what did I expect, and what has it become? I expected to be an opportunity to make all sorts of changes. I learned very quickly that you're still part of a team. You don't have a magic wand to suddenly do everything you want, and you have to bring people along with you and guide that dialogue to make things happen. So I did learn that, and I learned at the very beginning, because I stepped on a few toes as I was trying. I was excited about my changes, and anyway, I learned that quickly, that there is a way to get things done more effectively. And as far as other experiences, I was hoping things could go faster and we could do things. And I still think things are changing, will happen. I do think that this horrible COVID experience has certainly stalled and pushed aside all the opportunities or things that we were envisioning to happen. And now we can get back to that, hopefully with vaccinations, and get back to some normalcy and going forward. But so it's been an interesting ride.
And now when you were talking about how you thought to yourself and actually said it out loud, what have I done?
Well, no one heard that, but now everyone knows I said that.
So you have that thought, and it's like, did you think in that moment also like, okay, how am I going to balance this with my small business and being a mom and a harpist? And did those things cross your mind? Or talk to me a little bit about how you've like
the balance
over the years now.
You know, I don't know that that was a conscious thought, but that was certainly guiding this. Had to be a subconscious thought of, oh my, I've got this important assignment, and I need to be sure that I don't somehow cause harm to some of the area important things in my life. But I was fortunate in that I have a supportive family, very supportive husband, who really was the impetus to my applying and going forward. He knew my dreams, he knew my aspirations, and it was he was the one that actually said, "You need to do this, Grit, and you need to do this." And I said, and I gave him all the reasons, and they were business related, they were family related. Interestingly enough, I gave him all the reasons why I didn't have time, shouldn't do this, and he basically refocused me and said, "But what's important to you? What is ultimately, do you want to accomplish?" And he was right. And so I should say that I am fortunate that I have someone in my life that understands that and picks up the slack. So a lot of those things that I'm doing, I still get to run off and play the harp, but maybe I don't get to play for quite as many events. As far as family, I'll be honest, I haven't washed clothes for a while because my husband's doing the laundry. He's picking up the slack at home as well. With the business, he understands, and so often it's not unusual to be working there at 11 midnight or something just because there are other things that have sometimes take priority in the day. So it is a juggling act, but what makes it really work is that I have great support to make it happen.
And now, if I recall, city council wasn't necessarily your first bid for elected office.
No, it wasn't. it's correct. How many years ago now? Is it 8 years? How time flies when you're having fun. I did desire to be on the school board, but it was at the time when my three youngest sons were all in high school. They were all at that age, and I thought, this would be the perfect opportunity to make a difference in my community by serving on the school board. And I was so gratified how close I came in that race. I knew nothing about running for office, and a virtual unknown. I think I was within about 200 votes of being appointed, even beat out the incumbent and a few others who'd... Anyway, it doesn't matter about that, except to say it helped. It gave me... It was a wonderful teaching ground. So I understood the process of running for office and also the process of connecting with community members and how it all works. So that was a wonderful schooling. Secondly, it was probably a blessing in disguise, because had I had that office while trying to guide and help my three sons through high school, it would have been such a difficult road. So and in hindsight, I will tell you, all three of them got their eagles in Boy Scouts, and I don't know that that would have happened if I'd been elected. Anyway, so there was a silver lining. But certainly education is also an important part of what I want to do on the city council. We moved to Simi Valley for the schools and for that environment for our family, and I want to keep that environment for others. And so it's all part and parcel.
All right. And so looking at all these different aspects of your life, what does it mean to you to be a woman leader in Simi Valley?
It's humbling, because I don't know that I've ever used that title, woman leader. But as you say it, I recognize it's a blessing, it's an opportunity to guide and transform and to make some changes that I think could be so positive for our community. So I do feel that responsibility, and every time someone texts or emails me a concern, I feel like I need to personally fix it for that person, because I'm blessed to be in this position. I will tell you what I would love is a personal assistant. If somehow it came with a paid personal assistant, I could be ever so much more effective, but we'll get there.
And what are some of those key things that you want to work towards as you lead the city?
As it's funny you should mention, as I'm driving over, I thought, she might want to know what I want to get done. I better be able to be articulate about it. Interestingly enough, you mentioned the school board run. I do think our educational system and the security and safety of our community is critical, and it all kind of goes part and parcel. And so I really desire that there be a better working relationship between the three elected bodies in the city of Simi Valley. You've got your park systems, you've got your school board, and you've got your city council. And I would love to see a real tight working relationship, because I think more can be done together. So that's one of them. Secondly, you mentioned my business. I really want to be sure that we provide an environment where businesses can thrive. I will tell you that we started this business 25 years ago. I chose a year and a half ago to move it to Simi Valley because I wanted to understand the environment where, and also because I wanted it closer to home. That was one of the things we did, recognizing that it became so difficult doing the drive and the juggle. So we moved our company to Simi Valley. But I want to be sure, going back to what I want to do, that we provide an environment where small businesses can be successful and where businesses want to come and gather and work and provide particularly good paying jobs for local residents. There's too many small businesses that have been shuttered or are on the brink or are thinking of leaving, and I want to change that and make sure that we are very supportive because they provide the quality of life for everyone, the job base, etc. So that's a second area. And then thirdly, if I had my magic wand, since we're talking, I would transform some of our areas that are maybe underutilized, like, for instance, our mall. I would wave my magic wand and it would become a social gathering center where maybe we had an esports arena and where we had banquet facilities and other, it became kind of a performance or activity center, I should say. If I really had that magic wand, I'd love to take the center of our civic complex and basically install an outdoor performing amphitheater. Cultural arts opportunity. We have a lovely cultural arts center, which is beautiful. It seats maybe 100, 110 people. I want something where where a big portion of the community can gather together for events, for performances, for speeches, whatever. I think that we need something to do something at the heart of our city. And so, again, with my magic wand, that's what I would create. Of course, I've got to find the money to do all that.
I was going to say, actually, you touched on money. So let's talk about the city's finances just a little bit and how your background actually with Safe Checks, does that give you a unique perspective?
Well, it gives me the business perspective. It absolutely does. And I will tell you that my bachelor's degree is in economics and my master's degree is in urban planning. And so I think some of that education also helps me understand the weeds among the trees or whatever, to help to understand what we need to do to be very solvent for the city. The city needs to be completely stable and solid with its finances and needs to be very wise. And so I do think that is one of my roles on the city council, is to very carefully examine expenditures. It doesn't mean we shouldn't and couldn't spend. We absolutely need to do good things, but we need to understand the true cost, where the funds are coming from, and the true benefit to where the money came from, which is the taxpayer. Sometimes we need to be careful we don't lose sight of the fact that that is the funding source.
It's March, so we're not quite there yet, but right. I mean, we're getting close to budget time. Mm-hmm. So how do you prepare for that? How do you, get into that mindset of this is where we need to look and be mindful of all the taxpayers?
Yeah. Well, you read, you get those reports, and you dig through, and you get out your yellow highlighter, and then you ask questions. I talk to different people in the city to help understand what does this mean, because sometimes you're a writer, that you may write one thing, and maybe it's not clear, or maybe you meant to communicate this, and you would never do this. Maybe you're covering this, and so, you have to ask. So I read and ask questions ultimately, and then I'll be the first to admit that I value those who also have insights and expertise in areas, and I seek guidance from a variety of people because I think that's what you need to be successful.
Okay, and you mentioned seeking guidance. So who are some of your role models in doing what you do, and how you kind of guide your decisions?
Oh, wow. Well, they're the role models that help me financially, et cetera. But I'm going to mention, actually, I want to mention some, since this is Women's History Month, I want to mention some women who've guided who I am and how, just what make me who I am and why I make decisions the way I do. I'm just going to quickly mention my two grandmothers and my mother, because obviously they were formative. But my father's mother, my grandmother, paternal grandmother, Dr. Alice Pack, developed the TESOL program, teaching English as a second language. It was Church College of Hawaii then, it's BYU Hawaii now, but she was instrumental in helping to raise so many people out of poverty as she taught them methods whereby they could access the language that of commerce of the developed world. And so that emphasis and seeing how she was steadfast in that. So that's one of my role models. My mother's mother is Elaine Brockbank Evans, who I'm named for. And she got her master's degree from the University of Michigan back in the 1920s when women didn't go to college and certainly didn't get graduate degrees. But she was an artist, and she created absolute things of beauty. I mean, a lot of religious artwork for the New York World's Fair, a 7-foot-tall statue of Adam and Eve. But her focus on creating beauty, and I have in my home a relief statue, 7 by 5 feet plaque of Christ and the children, took her 5 years to sculpt. That tenacity to sit there and sculpt and work on a work of art for 5 years is just beyond my comprehension. But that is, but that understanding of the value of creating beauty around you and taking time and persistence is my legacy. And then finally, I'm going to end with my mother, who I'm Sherry Elaine Evans, who I believe would have had a career with Metropolitan Opera. Beautiful coloratura's voice, soprano voice, exquisite. But she sacrificed and said had a family, raised, had 13 children. I was the oldest. But that did not stop her from still creating things of beauty. In fact, there were a couple of oratorios that were written for her voice. One called "Visions of Eternity." Anyway, just because her voice is so beautiful, she still was able to do that. But yet, she empowered her children to be able to do so much, and she sacrificed. And I think that understand from her, I've learned to sacrifice it. It's sometimes you don't get to do everything. You have to be very careful and spend your time where it matters the most. And so. Anyway, those are my mentors. That wasn't exactly what you asked, but I just had to share that with you.
No, I think that's wonderful. I think mentors often guide us, and it's not necessarily like yours tend to be more in the art realm, but that doesn't mean that it didn't impact you in the family realm or as a city leader. So I think those are just as important. What else can you talk to me about, you know, observing, you know, the quality of life in CME and diversity and everything, you know, all these hot topics that we hear coming
right.
up and just
right.
being a leader and a woman and watching all of this happen,
right.
you know?
Well, it's, I'll be honest, it saddens me when I hear people who truly feel that they have been maligned or that they have not been given opportunities or been somehow negatively impacted because of race in Simi Valley. Because my experience is that it is a melting pot of wonderful opportunities. And in fact, you look at the employees of the city, you look at that I have the privilege of serving on the youth council. The diversity that is in that council is exciting and their ideas. And so I see wonderful things happening. Certainly no community is perfect. But the reason we moved to Simi Valley was I wanted to be sure that my children could all be in a public school setting and feel safe and have access to all sorts of opportunities. And so that's what took us there. And so I think it's critical that we keep Simi Valley that way and that it is that offers that for everyone. So if there is occasion when a bad apple or someone who is individually racist acts out, then that has to be stopped immediately and squelched and appropriately dealt with. And I will tell you that I've been very impressed with David Livingstone, our chief of police. His response to a couple of occurrences that you've read about in social media were decisive, swift, but very fair and very appropriate. So I that is encouraging that I see that kind of behavior in the city.
And just so our listeners know, those references you're referring to, that would be the graffiti that showed up in the wash and the stickers, the anti-Semitism stickers.
The two most recent occurrences. You're right.
Yeah.
But the reaction was absolutely appropriate. For instance, the graffiti in the wash, kids being stupid and inappropriate of various racial backgrounds, and my heart goes out to their families, and I'm hopefully they have learned how heinous and inappropriate that caricature is. And you know, it's interesting. I'm going to say this because I didn't get a chance to say this on the dais, but now I have a microphone. one of the things that disturbed me is the language that was used on the wall is a racial slur that everyone said is horrible. Well, just that same week, I was asked to play for a wedding in an outdoor setting that was appropriate. And I was sent a couple of pieces from Drake that they asked me to play for the wedding.
With a harp?
With a harp.
Okay.
With a harp. And, of course, I'm not saying the lyrics. One of them was one of his rap pieces. And here he is, one of the most successful rappers. And the piece that I was given to play probably had that same racial epithet used 5 or 6 times in his lyrics. And I'm thinking to myself, if the message our youth is getting from these people they admire, that you say this language and it's just used in fun, etc., no wonder they're confused, and no wonder they'll do stupid things. So I think we as role models, and this is not to bash Drake, I'm sorry, that's not intended. I'm just saying that, I'm just saying that people who are in a position of authority and leadership have got to be careful with their language and what they say, et cetera, because it matters, and it makes a difference our youth.
And now talking about the youth, you mentioned the youth council and how you're part of that. You're like the city council liaison to them.
I'm one of two. Councilmember Ruth Levin is also there.
Okay. And so talk about mentoring the next generation. I mean, I know that there's a lot of girls, teen girls on that. So when you're talking, looking at Women's History Month, how do you work with them? How do you encourage them to keep leading?
You know, our role in that instance is to be there if they need, if they need some support. I will tell you, they are so amazing on their own, what they've already got going, I'm in awe. So I don't know that I'm offering a lot, I'll be very honest. But certainly we have the opportunity to just make some suggestions, to encourage, to support. When they're looking for people to volunteer for XYZ, I can be the one that does that. And also to help them gain perspective. Because I think sometimes you have your vision of just your experience. And so I think that is my role there. But I'm really gratified as I see the diversity and the variety of background. It's exciting. And they're doing some great things. In fact, they've got, I'm sure you'll be recovering and reporting it, they've got a virtual night happening on the 12th. They've got some multicultural events happening. Yeah, lots of great things.
Well, thanks for coming in and talking with us today, Elaine. I appreciate it.
And thank you, Melissa. You are a delightful host and appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
March is Women's History Month, but this year, March is significant for an additional reason. 12 months ago, a virus known as COVID-19 went from being a concerning headline to a global pandemic that shut down the world and changed life as we knew it. What we thought could last a few weeks or maybe a couple months stretched into a full year and counting of virtual classrooms and remote conference meetings, of isolation, distance friendships, and for many, a lot of in-your-face family time. It was a year of masks, and with that, a year of unavoidably foggy glasses. I don't think anyone would call this an anniversary to be honored, but it is a significant milestone of a year of hardship and loss that should be observed. So Branching Out is going to try something a little different. We want to hear from you. What has the past year been like? What do you know now that you didn't know last March? What have you celebrated? What have you lost? What do you miss most about life before the pandemic? Who's the first person you're going to hug when it's over? We've set up a voicemail where you can leave us a message reflecting on this year of the pandemic, which we'll include in an upcoming episode. Your story can be about anything pandemic related. Just be sure to include your name and what city you live in. The last 12 months have been difficult, to say the least, and we each have our own unique story about what the experience has been like. At the same time, we've all been through this pandemic together. So let's talk about it. Call us at 805-399-2680.
I want to thank Elaine Litzer for coming on and talking with us about balancing her life as a city leader and her professional life. And stay tuned next week for more coverage of Women's History Month. I'm Melissa Simon with the Simi Valley Acorn, and you can find me on Twitter at Melissa_Simon.